නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ ආනාපාන සති භික්කවේ භාවිතා බහුලී කතා මහප්පලා හෝති මහානිසංසාති. Dear Dhamma friends, we have reached the end of Anapana Sati Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya, and we have discussed this in detail in several sections as according to the sutta evolves. And if we recall what we have discussed a little bit, so basically Buddha and the Sangha were living in Savatthi, where Migara's palace, basically that Migara Matupasada, sometimes called as Purvarama, which is built by Visakha, and Buddha and the Sangha was dwelling there, and the Sangha were quite diligently practicing, and the senior Sangha members were actually instructing the novices and other new members of the Sangha, and therefore they are also diligently practicing. And at the end of the Vassa period, Buddha decided to stay another 1 month, so that the Sangha is able to continue their practice. And at the end of another month, again Buddha summoned all the Sangha, and they were staying outside the monastery. And Buddha understood that this all members of the Sangha are doing really well, and they are quite diligent, and they are now at the moment residing quietly. And that was something that Buddha appreciated. And then Buddha mentioned that whoever giving even a small thing to this kind of Sangha is contributing a lot of merit. And not only that, Buddha mentioned that there are arahants in this audience, and there are non-returners, and there are once returners, and there are stream winners, and there are others who are practicing diligently. And they are practicing different types of meditation techniques, and which includes different levels of 37 Bodhipakkhiya Dhammas, or sometimes called as awakening factors, and some are therefore practicing four foundations of mindfulness, some are practicing four kinds of striving, some are practicing spiritual powers, faculties, and then again five powers, and enlightenment factors, and Noble Eightfold Path. So those are the 37 Bodhipakkhiya Dhammas some are practicing. On the other hand, others are practicing loving kindness, what we call as Brahma Viharas. And some are practicing the impermanence, foulness, and some others are practicing Anapanasati. So basically, in order for everyone to continue their practice, and again giving a very interesting methodology, Buddha is now presenting Anapanasati as a complete mechanism for one to attain Nibbana. So it actually consists of several levels, actually, where, say, for example, what are the different types of, say, foundations that one can develop through Anapanasati. So this is something interesting, because we typically think Anapanasati can only be developed through Anapanasati just to establish mindfulness, and only in the on the other hand, in Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha is coming up with a kind of a strategy how one can develop Kayanupassana using Anapanasati, and again how one can develop Vedanupassana using Anapanasati, how one can develop Chittanupassana using Anapanasati, how one can develop Dhammanupassana using Anapanasati. And when one is able to fulfill those four foundations, as one is developing those four foundations, one is able to slowly develop seven enlightenment factors. And when one is developing seven enlightenment factors in a systematic manner, then Buddha mentioned one is able to achieve path fruition, that is the vijja and vimutti, where are the knowledge and the freedom. So we were discussing these parts in detail, and today we have reached the last part, and where Buddha explained how seven enlightenment factors, if one is developing properly, how it is going to lead the development of knowledge and wisdom. Sorry, knowledge and freedom, vijja and vimutti. So let's discuss that part today, so that we are coming to the end of the sutta. And here, if I recall a little bit of enlightenment factors, so there are seven enlightenment factors, and mindfulness, investigation, effort, rapture, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. As we discussed last time, so there is a kind of a sequential order in development of these enlightenment factors as presented in the Anapanasati Sutta. So either you are developing Kayanupassana, or you are developing Vedanupassana, or Chittanupassana, or Dhammanupassana, you may have to establish mindfulness properly. So therefore, establishment of mindfulness becomes the very much the prerequisite in order to develop enlightenment factors. When only you are fully established mindfulness, unwavering kind of mindfulness, you are able to start developing mindfulness enlightenment factor, Sati Sambojjhanga. And when Sati Sambojjhanga is developing, then you have to put another effort to investigate whatever the phenomena where you are being mindful. Suppose you are now mindful on breathing, and once you are properly established on mindfulness on breathing, now you have to investigate breathing. Investigate in the sense, say when you are experiencing in-breath, you have to carefully investigate the in-breath. When you are experiencing the out-breath, you have to carefully investigate the out-breath. Say you are examining the in-breath and out-breath, so that in-breath become more evident, and not only that, you can even compare these two, in-breath and out-breath. And not only that, even later, you can recognize two consecutive in-breaths are not exactly similar. There may be very slight differences. Say about a minute ago, you were experiencing certain in-breaths, and now you are experiencing another in-breath, but there are certain differences. Previously, suppose it was shorter, you were experiencing it for a smaller period of time, shorter period of time, but now you are experiencing in-breath for a longer period of time. So there are such differences. Conversely, suppose you were experiencing in-breath longer few minutes ago, but now you are experiencing shorter in-breaths. So you can get this kind of an understanding. And as you further scrutinize your investigation, you are able to understand, okay, this is the beginning of the in-breath, this is the middle, this is the end, and there is a slight gap just before the beginning of out-breath. Then this is the beginning of the out-breath, this is the middle of the out-breath, this is the end of the out-breath, and there's a little gap just before the next in-breath. So likewise, you are able to recognize the full breathing cycle. So this indicates very precise investigation, so that contributes to the investigation enlightenment factor, which is Dhamma Vicche Sambojjhanga. Actually, this requires fair amount of effort, because this is not something very attractive. So breath is a very subtle process. So in order to carefully investigate that, you need fair amount of effort, and that has to be balanced. So the effort, Virya Sambojjhanga, is developing. And when things are happening properly, you may be quite happy, in the sense that all the difficulties are now subsided, you are able to overcome, and all five hindrances are subsided, and enlightenment factors are now developing. So naturally, there's an internal happiness, kind of a contentment going to develop, and that contributes to the development of rapture or the Piti Sambojjhanga. And when things are settling further, so you are able to recognize that mind is further calming down, body is tranquilizing, and you probably feel that body is very much like floating. So all these positive experiences going to appear. So therefore, tranquility, Passaddi Sambojjhanga, going to develop. So further, when body is tranquil, mind is tranquil, Buddha mentioned, mind get properly concentrated. Now it is not kind of a forceful concentration where you are trying to forcefully subside all the defilements. Rather, your internal qualities are now fairly improved. As a result of that, naturally hindrances are subsided, so the mind is automatically concentrated. So therefore the Samadhi Sambojjhanga is going to be developed. Now when everything happens smoothly, there is nothing to do. It's a matter of simply continuing the process. Things are happening smoothly, mindfulness is established, mind itself is doing the investigation part, so the information is available, details are available, and necessary amount of effort is maintained, and rupture, passaddi, those kind of qualities actually makes yourself feeling quite better, calm, tranquil, and simply mind is concentrated, so nothing to do, just allow the process to happen. So there you are developing fair amount of equanimity, because it's a matter of just observing the process without doing anything. Therefore the contribution of equanimity, enlightenment factor, is happening. Now this is how the enlightenment factors are being developed when you are developing kayanupassana. So similarly we explain how similar thing happens when we are developing vedananupassana, when we are developing chittanupassana, and again when we are developing dhammanupassana. Now those enlightenment factors are to be further developed. Now we are reaching the last part. Those are to be further developed, and now most of the time mind reaches this equanimous state quickly. Previously assume that it took around 1 hour for you to reach this equilibrium, but now it is not so. Maybe within 45 minutes you reach this state, maybe within 30 minutes you reach this state, within 15 minutes you reach this state. So once you reach this equilibrium, what you need to do? So this is a question, because now everything is happening smoothly, so what is the next step? So this is a frequent question that most yogis are asking when they reach this state. So basically here, not doing anything is the important thing. So basically we have made lot of troubles, lot of problems, various kind of complexities because of doing some, because of too much interference, because of too much manipulation, too much involvement. But now we are understanding a different approach. We allow things to happen smoothly, and now it is happening smoothly, and therefore we have nothing to do. So simply it's a matter of witnessing the process. So this witnessing the process, mere witnessing the process, develop fair amount of equanimity, and it does not develop if we are frequently putting our hand, if we are interfering to the process. So therefore Buddha explained this part in four different ways, that you have to develop enlightenment factors supported by seclusion. So mind is now secluded in the sense it does not associate anything. Say mind does not associate any kind of forms, it does not associate any kind of feelings, it does not associate any kind of perception, signs, marks, and it does not do anything creative even. It doesn't think. There are no any mental formations. Different kinds of thinking, thoughts are all very much like subsided. It's a thoughtless mind. And again, even though you may see, hear, say feel, etc., so mind is not involved with those external objects. That basically means, suppose while you are practicing, assume that you are in the walking path and you can see what is available outside. So you are practicing while keeping your eyes open. But mind is not interested of going and involving with those forms, those sights. And there may be various sounds available, you may be hearing them,
But mind does not go and involve with them, does not go and prepare a story out of that, does not go to proliferate. Mind likes to stay alone. There may be smells available, maybe fragrances, but mind is not interested of making a story out of that. It doesn't like to make a inner chatter out of that. And suppose there are even tastes available, same situation, different types of tactile sensations available, because while you are walking there may be different sensations available at your foot. But previously actually we were carefully investigating them, but now not. Now simply we keep the mind secluded, and mind itself is not interested of investigating. It likes to stay alone, mind its own business, very much like that. So similarly, there may be random thoughts due to various reasons. There may be different thoughts also appearing in the mind, but mind does not give much importance to them, and mind does not feed them, encourage them, support them. As a result of that, those thoughts also quickly disappear. So again, mind comes to that rest. So basically, one way of looking at this process is, now we are developing enlightenment factors while keeping the mind secluded. Viveka Nisitang, supported by seclusion. So this is one way Buddha is explaining that how we have to develop further these enlightenment factors. And another way Buddha explained, Viraga Nisitang. So whatever the forms, sights, say sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations, thoughts available from outside, you have a kind of a dispassionate approach. They may be quite interesting. Previously, suppose they were really interesting, and you may be thinking about them a lot, but now you are not doing that. They simply come and go. So just to give a small simile, suppose you are sort of seeing a very beautiful artwork. Suppose it is being drawn using watercolors, and you can see maybe very beautiful girls, boys, maybe rivers, maybe trees, very beautiful. And what typically happens is, we even forget that this is a picture. Rather, we immediately go and start to imagine in this scenery, and we are dwelling in that scenery. So that is where the complete ignorance is working. So we even forget that this is a picture, this is an artwork, but we feel it is very much kind of a real thing. Suppose now, due to some reason, say certain amount of water being spilled onto this picture, so as a result of that, what happens? So the whole picture become blurred, faded. Now you can't see clear lines, you can't see the beautiful faces, you can't see beautiful sunshine, beautiful trees, you can't see all these things because everything like faded. Now the picture has become discolored. So this Viranjana is very much like that. So everything has become discolored. So mind is not getting attracted to this picture now, because picture has discolored and you can't distinctly recognize the boundaries, lines. So therefore, it is not interesting. It is not beautiful. So as a result of that, mind becomes dispassionate towards this picture. So this Viraga Nisitang has some similar connotation, where sounds, smells, sights, and all these things are available. Even though they are there, mind has kind of a dispassionate approach towards them. Mind knows that even though they appear like beautiful, inherently there is no such beauty. They are quite impermanent. And if you attach to them, then you may subject to kind of a suffering. And intrinsically there is no any core, any essence in any of these. So these understanding. So insights are deeply inculcated in the mind. As a result of that, mind is not now interested about further going and involving with them. As a result of that, the attitude maintained in the mind is kind of a dispassion. So this dispassionate approach has to be further developed. It does not mean that you become quite disgusted about the whole world and you leave the whole world and you become depressed. So that is not the point. Rather, you are finding a way how to live without getting involved with this. So mind finds its own kind of a oasis. Rather than involving with this external phenomena, mind is finding its own kind of a vantage point. Find its own kind of an oasis, kind of a mindful oasis. So this is where we can see it's a kind of cessation, nirodha nisitang, where everything has stopped. Storytelling has stopped. Inner chatter stopped. Different mental formations stopped. Calm down. And mind has reached its stillness. Now mind is experiencing kind of inner calmness, inner silence. So these are the qualities that one may experience. So when one has reached this kind of a state, so that is where the typical conditioned phenomena have ceased. They may be actually continuously arising and passing away, but mind is not involved with them. So for the mind, they are very much like ceased. So mind rests in the cessation. Nothing is there. Mind is not interested of arising part. Whatever the arisen, they all have disappeared. They all have ceased. And as a result of that, so mind is simply resting, relaxing. So fair amount of relaxation is available. Now, the fourth part, Buddha mentioned, ripens in relinquishment. Vasagga parinami. So more and more, rather than getting attached, rather than getting involved, rather than getting attracted, now mind is developing a different attitude, how to relinquish. So the mind is attuned to relinquishment. So there are forms appearing but not getting involved. Assume that due to some reason the sight is very beautiful, very attractive. So you being tempted to get involved, mind go and little involved. Suppose like that. Then automatically the approach, relinquishment attitude is implemented. Because it understand, I mean, it's a kind of a mistake that I have done now. I have experienced kind of a cessation, seclusion, freedom, but now mind has gone and involved. So this is a kind of a burden. This is a kind of a heaviness to the mind. So let me come back to the freedom. So it's a kind of a back and forth process where due to various reasons like influxes, different latent tendencies, mind may go and involve, but later once mindfulness has indicated that now mind has become involved, so you may be experiencing little amount of stress, tension or kind of a burden, and mind has become somewhat dross. So these qualities, repercussions, you understood, and so you are quickly returning back to the equanimity. So probably you can remember how we were, I think we discussed Indriya Bhavana Sutta, where Buddha explained how one has to develop this part. So he always has to appreciate this equanimity, uninvolved kind of equanimity, unassociated type of equanimity, secluded type of equanimity. Mind is secluded. It is not that you become secluded. It is not that you simply leave your home and go to a temple. It is not the point. Rather, while among the people, you can maintain seclusion in the mind. Mind has its own kind of a freedom. Mind has its own uninvolved, unassociated freedom. So this is the important thing. So therefore, while being layman, one can practice this. So it's a matter of developing this. It's a skill that one has to develop. And as I said, to certain moderate external phenomena, you can do it easily. But there may be certain extreme cases. Those are very attractive, or those are very catching our eyes. So again, mind go and involve. So at that time, again, mindfulness will show us, okay, mind has implemented its own old habit. So therefore, we have to relinquish what is grasped. So the relinquishment is the one when one is basically practicing further in order to develop these enlightenment factors. So these four approaches Buddha mentioned in order to develop enlightenment factors further, so that one is enabling one's mind to dwell in freedom. Because when a fair amount of knowledge is not present, you can't spend yourself in freedom for a long time, because habitually mind go and grasp. So the typical habitual pattern of the mind is grasping. Whatever beautiful, you go and grasp. Whatever unattractive, you go and repel. You hate them. You want to get rid of. So this kind of a dualistic nature is available in the mind. So as you develop enlightenment factors further and further, so you are coming to a kind of an area where mind is not interested of doing this kind of a process. Rather, it likes to stay alone, secluded, without getting involved. But it doesn't mean, as I mentioned, that you feel defeated or you feel depressed. Rather, mind has found its kind of a home. Now only it has come back home. So it is a simple mindfulness, effortless mindfulness. And one can say it is effortless awareness, because mindfulness sometimes give a kind of feeling of involvement, that you have to purposely establish mindfulness. Suppose that's what we did at the beginning. When breathing happens, we purposely put our attention on breathing, in-breath, out-breath. So we purposely establish mindfulness. But at this level, there is no such kind of a deliberate mindfulness, purposeful mindfulness. Rather, mindfulness is there. So you have nothing to do. It is there. It is a kind of an inherent quality. So therefore, we can say it is a effortless mindfulness. Or we can simply say it's a bare attention. And it's very much like a natural kind of an awareness, which is inherent to the mind. And you have nothing to do in order to maintain that. It is there. Actually, what you need to do is to avoid doing anything. Because of doing, we are losing this natural awareness. While being in the natural awareness, we perform a lot of things, leaving the natural awareness. So we getting sort of mind get involved on the sort of incoming various phenomena, leaving the natural awareness. So that is very much the reference point. That is very much the baseline or home. So we always leave home in order to get involved. But now we are at home. So while at home, you have nothing to do. Simply rest. So very much like that. So this Sankhara Samatha, so stilling of formations, has a very great meaning, because we are fond of doing. Either using body, we need to do something. Either using words, we need to do something. If not, we want to do something through the mind. So that's why we are fond of thinking, philosophizing, and say sort of wandering, speculations, and all sorts of thinking is there. And ultimately we get habituated to thinking, and we start to enjoy thinking. One is enjoying in mental proliferation. So this is a kind of a very bad habit, vicious habit we have. So that contributes to the development of defilements further and further. Now, as we develop vipassana, one very important aspect of one's character is to avoid these mental proliferations. On the other hand, avoid these mental formations. Avoid these all different sorts of preparations happening in the mind. Just accept the way it is and rest. So this is where we can say one is supported by seclusion, one is supported by dispassion, one is supported by cessation, and again ripens in relinquishment. So more and more mind is ready to relinquish because it has now found the home. Suppose you are at home, and at home you have everything. Suppose now because of this COVID pandemic, so you are restricted to home. But before you come back home, assume that you are able to buy whatever the things you needed. Now your refrigerator is full of food and etc. You have all the dry rations. You have water, you have gas, you have petrol, you have electricity. Everything is available for you. Suppose now someone from the outside come and knock your door and ask that, do you need anything? Do you need any kind of, say, vegetables? Do you need any food? Then you don't need, because you already have them. Enough is available with you. So you simply say, no, I have enough. Then another person come and he want to market something. He want to sell something. But you are not interested. You are quite satisfied. You are contented. So you say, no, I don't want to involve. I don't want to talk with you. I like to stay alone. Not because I don't like you, or not because that I hate you. Rather, I have my own contentment. I am quite satisfied. So this is the kind of approach that one is maintaining when different, say, external phenomena is bothering the mind. Try to bother the mind. Actually, we can say like this, but this requires huge amount of practice. So therefore, if you refer Mahasunyata Sutta, available in again in Majjhima Nikaya, so Buddha give a fair amount of detail how one is developing this skill to maintain the mind in emptiness, to maintain the mind in this seclusion, this equilibrium, in this equanimity. Say Buddha mentioned that when one has recognized this state, so he has to further develop this. He has to further expand this, even to the other activities. Suppose that you are able to maintain this kind of a situation in your sitting session. Now you have to expand it to, say, 10 minutes. You have to expand it to 15 minutes. You have to expand it to 30 minutes. You have to expand it to 45 minutes. So now it is very much like registered in the mind, and mind recognize, okay, there is such a possibility to live alone, to keep the mind in seclusion, without being involved, keep the mind in silence, without any tension. So this is something now we have to cultivate. Now you go to the walking path and try to maintain the same thing. But unfortunately, since your eyes are open and sounds are available, and you have to deliberately walk, it would be difficult. Even though you could sit 45 minutes in emptiness, while at walking, within 5 minutes, suppose that you lose it. But that is the lesson. That is where we have to develop. And we need to understand why, again, mind get involved. So the reason is the defilements. So you understand, okay, still there's a tendency to get attracted or get involved or grasp things. Assume that you see someone that you don't like. Again, mind go and start talking in a chatter. Again starts. You start remembering what are the things that he did to you and how you get hurt. So all those memories probably might appear in the mind. So you can understand how anger or hatred still available in the mind, ill will available in the mind. So this is an anusaya, latent tendency available in the mind. Now you actually have to further remove that. Rather than cultivating ill will, now you recognize this as a kind of a shortcoming in the mind, and simply remove it. How to remove it? Not supporting it. You simply be mindful about the presence of ill will, and you were able to notice it at its early stage, therefore you are not burning with ill will, and now you stop feeding it. And again, you are not claiming it as mine. I am a bad person because my mind has ill will. Even such is not necessary, because that indicates kind of a identification, that you make a person out of this process and you think that I am a person who belongs ill will and therefore I am a bad person. So that is a kind of a personification. That is also not required. So that is where Buddha mentioned, Netam mama neso hamasmi na meso atta. This is not mine, this is not myself, and this is not I am. This is not mine. So that such kind of a disclaiming has to happen. So when defilements are arising in the mind, you are maintaining kind of an attitude where you are not claiming them as mine. Simply you avoid supporting them. You avoid become a slave to them anymore. As a result of that, defilements, they being conditioned phenomena, themselves start to cease. They start to fade away. They start to weaken. So this is how different types of defilements that we have to weaken. So it takes a long process. As Buddha mentioned in various other suttas like Vasi Jatopama Sutta. So it's very much like wearing out of a handle of an axe. So you can't say how much being worn out during day's practice. But after several years, you may understand there's a significant reduction of defilements. So likewise, we have to continue our practice so that mind become sort of calm, mind become rest. So mind is experiencing relaxed attitude and it has kind of a calm nature. And but still it is not guaranteed that we are completely free from defilements. So that is where Buddha come up with, say, at least of the latter stages of four levels. So actually these are explained using 10 sanyojana, or what we call as 10 fetters. So as you continue this process, if you are able to remove sakkaya ditti, vichikicca, silabbata paramasa. Sakkaya ditti is the personality view, vichikicca the doubt, and silabbata paramasa is not sort of thinking that kind of freedom is possible through various rituals and such kind of a wrong understanding. So those wrong views, those wrong understandings, doubts, personality view, so those are eliminated at first, and then Buddha mentioned that one reaches stream, has become a stream winner. So further development, able to recognize ill will, lust, ill will in the mind, and when it becomes further reduced, those become reduced, one become a once returner. And when one is able to completely uproot lust and hatred, then one become a non-returner. And the complete eradication of even the very subtle defilements like conceit, restlessness, different views, minor, even a very slight kind of wrong views, say kind of regrets, all sorts of even very minor levels of defilements are uprooted, and then one become a fully enlightened being, arahant. So therefore, the process is very much the same. Whenever mind get involved, whenever mind get attached, grasped, so the mindfulness will show us. So it's a matter of relinquishing it. So the relinquishment become kind of a natural behavior of the mind, rather than the grasping. As you know, because of grasping, we were traversing in the whole samsara. But now we are developing the opposite. Instead of grasping, when due to some reason, if grasping happens, so one is ready to relinquish. So the relinquishment is developed as the kind of a habit, as the kind of a routine, as a kind of a nature of the mind. So mind is now not interested of grasping. Instead, it is interested of being secluded, unassociated, unbinding, and ripens in relinquishment. So in Mahasunyata Sutta, actually, Buddha therefore explained that one has to further develop this while engaged in certain activities, how to, say, dwell in such kind of an emptiness. Say, while walking, how to maintain that. While sitting, how to maintain that. Say, while lying down, how to maintain that. And all this have to be practiced. It does not happen automatically. So Buddha mentioned that, so you have to cultivate it. So you have recognized the oasis, but still it is not well established. So you have to make it firm. Firm in the sense it is a kind, you saw that your mind is available inherently. Till it becomes an inherent quality, not to leave you, not to disturb by anything else. So at the beginning, it's very much like we may be able to maintain it for a short time. So as the development of the, as the practice, so it may, we may be able to develop it for longer time. And again at the beginning, this emptiness may break even with slightest things. But later it may not be disturbed by slight things. But still it may be disturbed by some extreme cases. But as we further develop, we may be able to endure everything, and that is where the patient endurance become one of the very important aspect of our practice. Kanti paramang tapotitikha. Patient endurance is one of the most important qualities that we have to develop in our practice, because we actually can't expedite the process as we wish. Suppose you understood the process, this is what we need to do, but simply by willpower, you can't expedite the process. So things have to happen naturally. It's very much like growing of a tree. So you can't simply expedite the process by applying too much fertilizer or applying too much water. Then it will destroy the tree. So you have to allow the process to happen naturally. So it's very much like a natural evolvement. So that is why the mindfulness maintained is a kind of a natural awareness. So you are resting in that awareness. Rather than putting kind of an attitude of striving, so you allow things to happen, and then and there you maintain the mind in equilibrium. It is not that you are trying to struggle and maintain equilibrium, rather when day's activities are going on, due to various reasons when different obstacles are coming on our way, so we are managing them, properly handling them, so that we are able to maintain the mind in equilibrium. So this is, in a way it is difficult, because we should not think that since we are practitioners that the obstacles may not come our way. They certainly will come on our way, but we should know how to handle them without getting involved, without getting sort of stressed out. Even if we get stressed out, how quickly we can return back to our equilibrium, back to the sort of that resting, relaxed state of mind, uninvolved state of mind. So that is where Buddha explained this as a very beautiful process in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, how one has to develop it till that one has become sort of expertise in this process. So if one is developing like this, so Buddha mentioned now it is not a person doing it, rather it's a kind of a natural process, dhammata. The term dhammata is used, say, when fair understanding, deep understanding is available, one outcome of that is relinquishment. Because when there is ignorance, we get involved, we get attached. But when there is wisdom, natural effect is mind is not involved. Mind is unattached. So whenever your mind is unattached, uninvolved, not stressed out, and maintaining or dwelling in that natural awareness, so that indicates fair amount of wisdom available, inherent wisdom is there. That is why it is not getting involved. So it's a kind of a fact. It's not that a person is doing it, but it's a kind of a natural fact. Therefore, Buddha mentioned it's a dhammata. Dhammatāyasa bhikkave yang yathābhūtaṃ jānaṃ passaṃ nibbindati virajjati. So this is mentioned in Cetanākaraṇīya Sutta in Anguttara Nikāya. So Buddha mentioned, so if the proper understanding, proper wisdom is available, it is a matter of fact that mind is not involved, mind is not interested of getting involved. And further Buddha mentioned, Dhammatāyasa bhikkave yang nibbindo viratto vimutti jnana dassanam sacci karoti. So when mind is very much attuned to dispassion and not getting involved, then vimutti jnana dassanam sacci karoti. So the understanding, knowledge is there. So it's very much like helping each other. The freedom and knowledge are very much like helping each other. When freedom is there, one has to maintain, it is having the understanding, it is having the inherent wisdom. When inherent wisdom is there, it doesn't want to get involved. So it's supporting each other. So therefore, this Anapanasati Sutta actually explained the whole practice in brief. Starting with very simple establishment of mindfulness using breath. One is developing all four foundations of mindfulness, and that leads to the development of seven enlightenment factors, and further development of seven enlightenment factors in this manner which we explained today as per the sutta explained. So one is able to uproot different levels of defilement so that one is reaching different attainments, and ultimately the completion, that is the path fruition of the enlightenment, fully enlightenment, arahantship. So with that, I like to conclude Anapanasati Sutta. So with this, actually the whole series we can end today. And now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So if we have any new friends joining us for the new year, you may ask questions by raising your hand and or send them via the chat. Renuka, you may ask your question. Renuka, are you able to unmute?
Teruan Sarna Bante, Namaskar Eva.
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Bante, now, when we realize this, during the meditation, I can feel that I can feel that when I attach to something, when it's a pleasure feeling comes in, that also is a heaviness. Heaviness I feel, and even angry feeling comes, that also I feel the heaviness. So I feel this heaviness in both sides of the thoughts. So then I like to be in that without those two. Stages without that, without my mind is so peaceful without having the attachment or the attachment or getting away from it. So when I get a feeling in the day to day life, I feel my heart is, my mind is shrinking, kind, you know. When I get a feeling of attachment, or when I get a hatred feeling, in day-to-day life, I feel like my mind is shrinking, and you know, it's something that that you want to get rid of it. So is it okay to feel like that, or Ante, or is it also again another mental qualification?
Yeah, I think it is not mental proliferation, because as Buddha explained in the say Indriya Bhavana Sutta, so at the beginning we have to use various techniques, vipassana techniques, to free the mind. So we understand, okay, mind got involved, as a result of that there's a little bit of burden that we may feel, kind of a tension we feel, and now we have to sort of apply certain vipassana technique and free the mind. So there are, Buddha mentioned three methods, probably you can remember, olarikam sankatam patisasamuppannam. So we understand the present situation, the new situation is quite gross, but we were in a very subtle, relaxed, simple kind of a situation. So therefore, compared to that previous situation, now mind has become gross. So when we understand that, so Buddha mentioned, so you try to go back to that equanimity. Because that equanimity is so simple, no tension, freedom is there. And the other hand, Buddha mentioned, say, understand the constructed nature of this new situation. Because something has happened, say you saw a kind of an image, but on top of that you constructed a lot. So you have attributed that image to a person, and all those previous memories are now sort of inserted to the picture, and all those different preconceived ideas are inserted to the picture. So likewise, you did the kind of a construction. So you understand this constructed nature of the new situation. As a result of that, now you are able to disentangle or unentangle the thing and return back to that equanimity. And else, Buddha mentioned, see the sort of conditioning, or what you call the dependent co-arising of this whole process, and you can return back to the original nature. So on the other hand, if one become a stream winner, or if one become a trainee, Buddha mentioned that he doesn't need to do this much in order to return back to that original nature. Rather, he simply does not approve what has happened, because he is fairly practiced the previous what I have explained, but now he is fairly familiarized with this process. He likes to, mind likes to dwell in that emptiness, uninvolved, unattached, freedom. But unfortunately, due to past habit, again mind get involved, again mind get attached. So that new state, now you are not recommending, now you are not appreciating, you are not ready to get delighted with it. Instead that, you are not approving it. So you are being shameful about why this mind is still doing it. So Buddha mentioned, so that kind of an attitude available in the mind, that you being shameful about what has happened, that you are not approving what has happened. So that kind of attitude helps you to return back to that original nature, to return back to that equanimity. So therefore, we can say at the beginning we have to do a little bit of work in order to free the mind, but later it has become kind of a natural thing that simply once we are being mindful, when we are not approving what mind has done, it quickly returns back. Very much like that you are educating a child, as I probably have explained in a previous time. So at the beginning, child has no much knowledge. So therefore, you have to, as a parent, you have to guide him, you have to tell him again and again. Sometimes you have to blame him, sometimes you have to punish him, because he has not grown. He doesn't know what is correct and what is incorrect. But later, this child is now growing and he is being educated. And now he has his own wisdom. But due to still certain habit, probably he is going to do something. But as a parent, now you are not going to too much tell him, because already told, already he know. But simply you simply look at him. What are you doing? Simple recognition, indication that you are not approving what he is now going to do. That very much is enough.
then child know that yes, I'm not going to do something good, and my parents haven't approved it, so I don't need to do it. So likewise, our mind has to be cultivated, developed, and I think therefore what you are doing is quite all right. So you don't need to practice too many technical things here. I mean, if the mind is ready to return back to that unattached nature with a slight observation, that is more than enough.
Thank you, Bhakti.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you very much, Theravan Sadhanai.
Yeah, Theravan Sadhanai.
Thank you. The next question, I want to invite Nikisha.
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer. Bhante, I actually want to ask a small question that's relating to the ending part of this discussion. I mean, today's session that you had. In there, actually, the last section where develops Bhavati, is it Bhava or was it?
Bhava.
It says poverty, right? And in there, it's supported by seclusion. So that supporting factor is the last one.
So which part you are referring to? Can you see the screen? Last
the diagram?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bhaveti. Develops. Is this the one?
Yeah. Develops poverty or
no, Bhaveti. Bhaveti. Develop. Develop.
Bhaveti.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bhaviti means the Pali word, right?
It's yes, exactly. Develops,
okay.
Yes, yes.
Alright. So supported by seclusion, so the development of this Vijaya and Vimukti, in other words, knowledge and freedom.
Actually, we can say we are developing enlightenment factors.
Mm-hmm.
So enlightenment factors being developed using this seclusion, associating dispassion, associating cessation, etc. So the result is knowledge and freedom.
Okay, I got it. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you go, I mean, when you develop these enlightenment factors, yes, the seclusion, dispassion, cessation, and ripens in relinquishment. What is the meaning of the last one? Actually, my question is about
relinquishment.
What is the meaning of this
relinquish.
Last one?
Relinquish. Give it up.
Yeah.
In the sense, now suppose, now typically we are very much like programmed to grasp. Our habit is grasping. Whatever beautiful we got and grasp, and we want to possess it. We want to buy it. We want to make it my mine. So that is the typical approach. But now instead you have that mine has its own contentment. And it likes to be alone, secluded, and therefore, from whatever outside, mind doesn't want to get involved, rather it likes to stay relaxed. So, therefore, the previous attitude, grasping attitude, has changed to relinquishment attitude. So, rather than always like to grasp, if in case mind get grasped, so mind is ready to relinquish. Actually, further explanation given in the Patisambhida Magga, it mentioned that it is twofold. This what you call relinquishment. Sometimes in the practice we call it as Patinissaggaanupassana, Patinissaggaanupassi, where so assume that mind get involved with something. You see something and that is beautiful, and again mind go and get involved with it. So you feel a little burden. You feel that you have lost that freedom. You have lost that simplicity. Mind again has become little heavy. So that indicates mind has grasped. Now what you need to do, you got to relinquish what is grasped. And you have to return back to emptiness. So these two things happen very much like together. You are relinquishing what is grasped and returning back to the emptiness. So therefore relinquishment, Patinissagga Anupassana, is twofold, what is called Parichaga Patinissagga and pakkhandana patinissanga. Parichchaga means you are relinquishing what is being grasped, and now mind automatically becomes empty. Now we are dwelling in empty. You appreciate being in the emptiness. It is not also kind of a forceful being in the emptiness, which is very much like natural being in the emptiness. It is not that purposely being in a very strong, deep samadhi you are trying to maintain the emptiness. That also may happen at the early stages of the practice, but more and more, with the lessening of the defilements, with the kind of diluting of the defilements, so you don't need to maintain such a strong samadhi. Rather, being in the natural awareness, one may be able to dwell in the emptiness.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understood what you said. Shall I give you a day-to-day example?
Sure.
That's the one that it means. So now when we talk with people in day-to-day life, like some people say, oh, this is it, I made this or I bought this. This is a really a nice one. And showing it,
mm-hmm.
we'll say it's a
beautiful thing.
Household item.
Mm. Yeah.
It's beautiful, it's useful, this and that.
Yes.
And then the person is explaining about it and showing it, and then I watch, would say someone.
Mm-hmm.
Someone is watching on that and then thinking, okay, it's another item.
Mm.
All right. And then before we get onto this practice, we normally tend to, okay, it's a really a useful one. I must save some money to get something like that. I must buy something like that because it's useful.
Correct.
It's useful for my life. And
correct.
It's good. It's the prestige, and then I can show up some other people that I have this, and
yes,
it's useful like that. So that's
correct.
Before the practice.
Correct.
But when we get out of the practice, we looking at it. Oh, it's another item. And okay, what's the point? Oh, all right. It's made out of these four elements. And
I think you don't. One may not. Yeah, one may not go even to that level. I mean, you don't need to remember that this is made of four elements, maybe. But naturally, I mean, even assume that someone is telling that this is so useful, and assume that honestly you understood that that is useful, and you understood that is even necessary at the moment. And you may even buy it and take it. Still, mind is not involved. Mind is not involved means that you are not sort of occupying your mind with the too many thoughts about it. You understood, yes, it is necessary. At the moment, my family requires it. Okay, I am going to buy it. Decided, but more and more, again, mind returns back to the emptiness. So it does not mean that you are sort of always remembering the very, say, ultimate truth. That this is four elements, this is that. So may not be necessary, because mind likes to be in the emptiness. Mind likes to be in kind of not getting entangled with things. So even though you take certain actions, but mind is still resting. Say, there's a beautiful simile I can give you regarding the Buddha's how he is taking meals. Actually, there is one youth being sent by one of the Brahmins to check the Buddha. So whether he is the real Buddha. So now one is following the Buddha. I think his name is Subhamanavaka. So he is continuously following the Buddha from distant and trying to do a kind of an investigation. And so he is giving ultimately a report. He is submitting a report. And in that report he mentioned, so while Buddha is taking food, suppose he has gone to a particular dana, say offering of a lay person, and there are other monks also, and now Buddha is being offered sort of food, maybe delicious food, and this Manavaka, this youth, is mentioning, it seems that I am quite evident that Buddha feels all the different delicious tastes. But definitely he is not feeling any kind of greed. His mind doesn't have any kind of greed. So, rasa patisangvedi chako bhagava nocha rasa raga patisangvedi. So, the rasa, the typical tastes, all delicious tastes are being felt, but there is no any greed. So the defilements are not available. So likewise, our faculties are available, they are sharp even, and you may use them, but keeping the mind free from any defilement. So this is the practice. So I mean, we can't do it immediately, we can't do it overnight. So slowly it may happen. That's why I mentioned, just for a minor things we probably even can do. Say you see a insect, while you are walking you see several ants, so mind is not involved. Maybe you are seeing a butterfly, mind is trying to involve, probably you can avoid it in the sense, you simply be mindful, okay, mind avoided it. So you still maintain the seclusion. Suppose you are seeing a very beautiful person, very attractive, very handsome, very beautiful, some whatever it is, again mind go and try to involve, because that's a further enticing of defilements, further enticing of those habitual tendencies. Probably now mind get involved. So at that time, again you have to understand, okay, mindfulness will tell you, okay, now the mind has involved. Now I feel little burdened. Now I have lost the present moment. Now my mind is tend to think. Certain thoughts are maybe trying to appear. And mind get occupied with different, say, images of that particular person. And mind has a willingness to look at further. So likewise, certain sort of activities are now going on in the mind. So you may notice it. So once you notice that, slowly you have to calm down. Not to promote it, not to support it, not to get overwhelmed by that. So that is slowly you are calming down. So likewise, suppose in the future, even when you see such a beautiful person, mind is not involved. So at the beginning it get involved, say that may be several years ago, several months ago, but now not. Something like that. Are you there, Mahesha? I don't know whether he is. Oh, yeah.
Yes, Pandey, I was listening to you. It's a very good explanation.
Right.
Some sounds came through from my side, so I knew,
right.
Mute myself again.
Fine.
And another little question attached to that. I think that's something that we should practice control, I think. So once we get on with that and you're thinking, okay, this is not something that I'm not going to go with my mind throughout that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, then we think about the person who showed it, oh my goodness, this person actually trapped in this, you know, whole scenario of, you know, things going in the, you know, in the world where they grab everything, you know, sophisticated items, comes.
Mm.
So mind sometimes try to take on a tour like that,
mm-hmm.
thinking about it, again comes to like ego,
mm-hmm.
self-ego, like,
yeah.
I'm not thinking about it in that way, the way that he or she thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
So you are making an ego in a different manner. Yes, that is also possible.
Yeah. So yeah, sometimes the mind jumps into that and thinking,
yes.
about that person or poor thing, or I would have explained to her what's the use of that item,
yes.
because
yes.
you can do the similar thing with the what you have.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You
very
know.
True. Very
so
true.
So sometimes mind jump into that. Sometimes I mean manage to recognize, okay, this is not going on off track.
Correct.
I shouldn't go and think in that way.
Correct.
But it's happened sometimes.
Yes,
so,
yes, certainly. That's why I mean,
mind is so
tricky, actually.
So in that case, if that kind of a thought comes, then we have to control it and say, oh my God, you are on off track now. And that's not your job to, you know, think like about that person.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's no point. Because my purpose is to control, look at my mind, how it's jumping into things unnecessarily, and then
yes.
be mindful about it.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of is where the last part is very much like the Panya Sikha, the wisdom training, and in today's terms, we can say it's a kind of a cognitive transformation. So you are recognizing your own shortcomings, the mind shortcomings, and mind is so tricky, and when we are able to protect ourselves in one area, mind go and involve in a different area, in a different manner. So that also has to be properly handled. because mind is so tricky. And as you said, that you being not getting involved may be too much appreciated, and through that probably you are making a self, you are making an ego, and you are looking down the other person that he is not a good practitioner, but you are a good practitioner, you are now a capable person. So likewise, you may prepare a person, you may prepare a self. So that also has to be avoided. So that is where, I mean, it's quite interesting in a way how tricky mind is, and how swiftly it is trying to make a self out of anything. I mean, out of anything it may try to promote kind of a self-view. So that has to be recognized and not supported, and not to support. It's a kind of a, actually it's a long-term cognitive transformation that we have to continue, recognizing all these different tendencies available in the mind and not supporting them, and slowly admitting that this is a kind of a defilement, this is not a necessary thing, and I better stay uninvolved, better stay unstressed. So likewise, there is something to appreciate and there is something to avoid in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bhante. It's very clear.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite you to Debbie for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yes, Bhante, now, I have my question, but going from the previous speaker,
mm-hmm.
you touched on, how to look at this, because we all in different forms and shapes, the ego or the self comes in when we are living. So it would be nice if we could have some kind of formula or training module for us to be able to put that into practice, to all the time try to look at it from that point of view, to in order to lose the self, because I think that is the biggest problem that we are having.
Correct. Actually, I hope to explain two Sunyata Suttas from next week. So that basically encourages how to dwell in emptiness. So that that actually Buddha deeply explained the value of emptiness, how to accomplish that, how to maintain that. So those kinds of practical points are there. So so I hope to take those suttas next time.
That's good, Bhante. So my question is, when I have the correct conditions, like, when I have the time and when I have the house to myself, I do go into a quite a good level of sort of
samadhi,
emptiness, or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a form, for me, I don't know whether that's correct or not, it's an intense form of body-mind relaxation. It's very peaceful, like a pasadhi, and I can be like that for a long time, Bhante.
Correct.
In the meditation. But of course, when we get back into the real world, to put all this to be peaceful, and, when we have time limits and we are running against time and we have to have deadlines, then of course, it's very difficult to apply all that.
Correct.
So I don't know whether you can give us a formula for that also.
No, you can't expect any formula. So it's our own practice. So it is basically our own practice. We have our own mind-made world on which that individually we are living, and there we need to understand how we make a world, how we prepare a world for ourselves. So I have my own kind of a world, you have your own kind of a world, and we are living with that, with various concepts. And now, using the Buddha's teaching, how to sort of come out of that world and finding out a more kind of a proper nature, how to dwell in emptiness. So that's a kind of a lifelong practice. So we recognize there's a possibility, there's a kind of a freedom available currently, probably even we may be experiencing it for a short time temporarily. How to enhance it, how to make it as my nature of the mind, not to make a self, not to identification, not to make an I, So in order to do that, actually we have to understand how we are making an I. And then and there, when mind is habitually making a self, that we have to notice, that we have to understand. And previously what we did was we promoted that. Yes, I am there, so I am better than him. Yes, I am the best, so I can add this to my CV. So all these different levels, all these different experiences, we used to promote a self. But now the opposite has to happen. So mind habitually try to do it. We notice it, and then we understand the futile effort, that a futile sort of habit mind is having. So now we are not promoting it, rather going back or returning back to the emptiness. So it's a kind of a practical say exercise that we all have to do. So I mean, the formula is the same as we explained today. The methodology is explained again and again in many different suttas, but we have to apply it in our own worlds, because I have my own world and there are difficulties in my own world, and there are different persons that in my world with whom that I like, there are persons in my world that to whom that I don't like. So using them, I am making troubles, I am making defilements. So mind get involved. So I have to apply to those occasions, when I am dealing with them, I have to apply. So similarly, you have your own such kind of things, and you have to apply the teaching onto those occasions. So likewise, we have to, the teaching is there, the technique is available, method is available, but we have to apply it according to the, depending on the context.
Now you also use this Pali word, Vasagga
Parinami. Vasagga Parinami. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Can you just elaborate on that?
Same thing I explained to Mahesha, where the relinquishment is the kind of an attitude now available in the mind. Rather than grasping, mind is very much like trained to relinquish. Whenever, if in case mind gets grasped, so it is now quickly ready to relinquish, rather than promoting it, rather than supporting grasping, rather than start to storytelling, rather than trying to dwell in it, rather than try to delight with it, quickly relinquish. Return back to emptiness. Yeah. Yes. Patinissaggānu passanā means that you do relinquishment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so, I think that last part was really, really very beautiful, Bhante.
Yes.
The last bit was quite eloquent, really, and very beautiful. So thank you.
Yeah, okay. Actually, you can see that in Dhammanupassana, number 16, contemplating relinquishment, and here also, ripens in relinquishment. So there's a coincidence in here. So the enlightenment factors for foundations of mindfulness, so those are all well sort of focused ultimately to relinquishment. Relinquishment, so when things are relinquished, so mind is in freedom.
Yes.
Mind is in freedom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Jennifer. Can you hear me, Bhante?
Yes.
Bhante, talking about relinquishment, just want to clarify a Dhamma question. In the Dhamma Chakkappavattana Sutra, in the cessation of suffering, it says Chago Patinissaggo Muttiyo Analayo. Is that the four types of relinquishment? And is it the same, or has some relationship with the Dhammanupassana section that you have put there on the diagram? Can you please clarify for me?
Yes, sure. Actually, what we are pointing out is very correct. Chaga, Patinissagga, Mutti, Analaya. So we can say those are also different facets of relinquishment. Chaga means that you donate, that you give up. Chaga. And Patinisagga, of course, is the same relinquishment. Patinisagga anupassi, Patinisagga, the same word, you are relinquish. Mutti. Mutti means that mind is free. Mukta means that mind is not involved. Mutti. Analayo means mind has no any attachment. So the same situation, Buddha explaining in different ways. But the result very much is the same. So once the mind, assume that mind get grasped something, mind get involved with something, to which now you have to donate it. You have to give it up. You have to let it go. And it's a matter of relinquishing. So you relinquish. And in order to do that, you have to have a dispassion towards it. Instead of alaya, you have to have analaya. You don't like it, in the sense that you are not hating. Rather, you don't have any special desire to it. So you can easily relinquish. And once it is being relinquished, mind dwells in freedom, mutti. So mind is free. So that is the Nibbana in a way, actually. So Nibbana, the Nirodha Satcha, Buddha explains like that. While in this area, very much like the mind is in that freedom, it's a kind of a temporary release, temporary Nibbana, we can say. So that in certain suttas, Buddha used the term, Nibbuti. What Nibbuti? Achanta Nibbuti. Padanga Nibbuti. Padanga Nibbuti. So due to conditions, at the moment mind is free. But later, assume all the reasons causing any kind of burning, causing any kind of an attachment, any kind of an involvement, you are able to remove through the practice. So then you can say, okay, now mind is in the permanent Nibbana, or the ultimate freedom, and that is the Achanta Nibbuti. So Nibbuti is the Nibbana. You can say it's at the beginning what you experience is only for a temporary time, short time. But later with the practice, further and further you are expanding it, you are making it available, and you are able to maintain it without less effort. But previously you have to struggle in order to release the mind, but now not much. So likewise, the process is developing. And ultimately, when one becomes an arahant, he has nothing to do. So basically, his mind is free. Because the causes, conditioning the mind to get involved, conditioning the mind to get attached, are being uprooted. No more conditions are available. So when the conditions are not available, he has nothing to do. What is necessary to do is done. Kata karaniyo. So for the arahant, there's a beautiful term used, kata karaniyo. What needs to be done is completed, done.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Teruvan Sannai.
Yeah, Teruvan Sannai.
Thank you for the lovely explanation. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, I think we have come to the end of the program today. I hope, Jennifer, you haven't received any more questions.
No, Bhante, confirming that was the last question.
Good, okay. Then we'll wind up today's session, and through this today's Dhamma discussion and hearing through the Sutta teaching, we were able to accumulate some merits. Let's share these merits with all the past away relatives, all the celestial beings, and whoever in need of merits. And let's wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana.